It's time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday the 8th of February 2014. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday from 10 till 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oneroa. On Saturday the 8th of February, David Basham talked to original Radio Hauraki pirate Ian McGann, whose story will be told in the movie 3 Mile Limit, premiering on Waiheke, courtesy of Waiheke Radio, on the 7th of March. David also spoke to Russell DeLu from Friends of the Street and Dan Ballard from Waiheke TV.
Hello, Ian. Are you there?
I'm right here, David.
All right. Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine. It's good to hear you. Okay, so there was a very young Ian McGann on the 3rd of May 1966. He left Whanganui in a Vauxhall with a black and white TV, heading for Auckland. What was he hoping to find?
Well, you've certainly done your research. he didn't really know. I'd been cajoled into joining the group by Paddy O'Donnell, who the late Paddy O'Donnell, sadly, who was a fellow broadcaster in Whanganui. He left before I did to join the boys up here, and he talked me into joining about a month or two later. So up I came, not knowing what was in store, really, because I didn't know anybody, and had already left a very good and promising career in NZBC to venture into the unknown, so to speak.
That wasn't the mention of £50 a week, was it?
There were various money stories floating around, but I've always been, it must be the Scottish in me, I always believe things when they actually become reality, and I didn't really know what to expect. I think you'd find that very few of us would have joined for the money. This wasn't a money thing at all. This was a much higher aspiration.
And so what did you find when you got to Auckland?
Well, a very interesting group of people, actually. People that I felt I could immediately bond with, that I could immediately believe in, and who, to my surprise, had the same views as I did about freeing up New Zealand radio so that people would have the right to listen to basically whatever type of programming they felt they needed to.
And
of course, included, in our case, we were specialists in presenting modern rock music to the public. Right. That's what we were out to do.
Yeah. When you came up, you were actually working for government radio?
Yes, I'd had a good 4 years with them, and a very enjoyable time, I might say. You know, it was a great training base for people, the government radio. We had no problem with it as a service. It was excellent. But, of course, it was somewhat restricted because of the mores of the day.
Yeah, and when you got up to Auckland and you were working on Hauraki, you were all more than DJs, weren't you?
Well, that was a bit of a surprise. You know, Dave and Derek and the guys didn't waste too much time in explaining to us that there was a lot of work needed to be done on the boat, and they'd really appreciate it if we could give them a bit of a hand. So, of course, we did. You know, we all got stuck in and did a lot of work helping get the boat ready. Months of work.
I've seen photographs of you stripped to the waist doing all sorts of things.
Oh, yes, we did. Because in those days, people only knew a little wee bit about what we were doing. There was no major public awareness at that point. This was in May 66. And it wasn't until a few months later that it all hit the fan, so to speak. Mm.
Because you were desperately trying to keep things secret, weren't you, like the transmitter?
Yes. Well, first of all, we had trouble finding a transmitter, and then when we did, we didn't want people to know that, you know, it was ready to go. So, we were keeping a lot of things secret. There was a lot of mystery around the boat as it was moored at the viaduct here in Auckland.
Right. And I suppose you were trying to keep that 27th October leaving night on a Sunday night quiet as well.
Well, that sort of just happened. We did have in mind sailing around that time, but we heard things were hotting up. We got some private information that things were hotting up at the with the government, and that they were getting ready to sort of get stuck into us and to basically stop us from sailing. So basically David and Derek and the guys made the decision, and Doc O'Callaghan, to get the boat out sooner rather than later. So it was that long weekend in October 66 that they decided to make the move. And the news just happened to hit the Sunday news at the same time.
Yeah,
and that's what started the whole thing off publicly.
Yeah,
Sunday News ran with the story, and that night was the night we tried to get out, of course.
Right, and yeah, and that was when the tide wasn't helpful, was it?
Yeah, well, the tide was down. The props were churning up bits of Auckland from the seabed as we were trying to get out, because by that time, the police were acting, and the public had arrived to see what the hell was going on, and we were all there, and so were the police, and it got all very confused and became a major part of our story, actually, that night at the viaduct.
Yeah, that was sort of a near riot, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. It was as close as you'd get in those days to a riot, yeah.
Because...
Yeah, and I think the crowd were restrained. I think had our guys spurred them on somewhat more, it could have been pretty nasty. But,
yeah.
Even though we were a disparate lot of people, as a group, we were fairly responsible, actually, and we didn't want it to elevate into something that was out of control, because then we would have genuinely been in trouble with the authorities.
Yeah, and you wanted to keep things... people on your side as well.
Absolutely.
You didn't want them too far out. But of course you had David Gates and Peter Telling and Brian Strong underneath the bridge.
Yeah, they were about, yeah. Pete was one of the first, and he stuck his head right down where the cogs of the bridge met, so that the man at the control box couldn't lower it any further, because they were lowering the bridge on the boat, as you know. As the boat was sliding through this narrow part of the viaduct, the swing bridge, or the elevated bridge across the gap, was being lowered down to stop us going through under police instructions. So Pete stuck his head under the cogs of the thing, and the man had to stop lowering the bridge.
Yeah, and then of course...
And there were half a dozen of us along the under the bridge at that time. I can still remember a police Alsatian licking my neck as I sat with my feet over, with Dave and the others over the legs hanging over the edge of the viaduct. And this cop said, are you ready to give up, son? And I suddenly thought I might be better off jumping, kidding. It might be safer in the water than I might have been where I was, which of course I didn't.
Right, so then, of course, there was the big issue with the aerial, the mast, and that had to be pulled back to get the boat out?
Yeah, that was the, well, a couple of us clambered up the half-dropped bridge to fix the rope to the top, and that rope eventually found its way out to that crowd of people, our public.
Yeah, and they pulled the boat.
And they pulled it free.
Yeah. I can say we pulled the boat over. And
oh, you were there.
Yep. That's how I know so much about it. Because I think you were up there with Colin Broadley.
Yeah, Colin Broadley and I. Yeah.
That's right. And
by that time, the rest of the guys were back on the boat. Because they knew it was imminent that we would probably get out. So they all got back on the boat, and with the result that we did get the boat free of the bridge, and it did go out, because Colin and I missed it because we were stuck up on the bridge.
Right. Yeah, and of course that gave time for the police to get on the boat, didn't it, really?
Yes, the police had already boarded, and things got pretty hectic there.
Right.
Derek tells her quite a few stories about cops' hats being thrown into the water and things like that. You got the odd scuffle.
Well, things were pretty pretty passionate about what you were doing.
Well, we knew that the police were trying to take from us something that was certainly morally, if not legally, ours. And we didn't appreciate that very much. And I think a lot of the cops felt that they were there under some false pretense as well, quite honestly.
Yeah.
Because they were being given orders by a minister who had multiple portfolios, one of which happened to be the police.
Right.
And there was a huge conflict of responsibility there.
Yeah, and I mean, he was telling you one thing and then saying another, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, the boat eventually got out, but it didn't last long because our guys on board were arrested and they brought it back.
Were you actually on the boat?
No. As I said, Colin and I were stuck up on the bridge, helped free the mast. Mm. And by the time we clambered back down again, it was heading off into the Auckland Harbour. So we waited at the wharf gates as they came back, because it wasn't long before they were back at the dock. And at that point, everyone was headed off to the wharf police station.
That's right. And you were. And then there's the great incident with Paddy O'Donnell.
Well, he lost his pants.
Yeah.
Yeah, they told everybody to undo their shoelaces, take the shoelaces out, and take their belts off, because this is, I believe, standard procedure, or was, to prevent the prisoners from self-harming. And so Paddy, being a skinny fellow, took his belt off, and his pants fell to his ankles. And the cop said to pull your pants up. He basically said, well, you pull them up.
Yeah, so he was
hands down.
he was a hard case, that lad.
Well, he was a good Irish boy, you know, and he as much as any of us felt that an injustice was being done, and we weren't there to cooperate with the police that night.
Yeah. And so, coming along a few days later was the town hall meeting.
Yes,
and that you filled the town hall, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, yes, the word got around, and there was some great oratory that night. Derek Lowe, I think, led the oratory from the stage and put our case very succinctly and very emotionally to the audience, and they responded very enthusiastically. It was a big night. It was the first time we'd been able to publicly confront our potential listeners.
Yeah, Derek Lowe told me that there was supposed to be a counsellor or someone that was going to come along and speak, and he pulled out. And Derek said,
right,
when he was given the job, he didn't know what the hang to do.
Yeah,
he said
that's
to
right.
me, every time he said about a sentence, people just screamed. So he said he reckoned he could have kept on doing it all night.
Yeah, well, it was certainly a pivotal point, because it gave us that contact that we needed with the public, having had the early one with the boat. But he handled it really well, and it's quite right. We were expecting support from on high, but that never arrived, really. We never got much support from anybody in official circles, because most of them were too scared to do anything in case the government came down on them.
Yeah, I don't think people quite realised in those days there was a lot of regulation, a lot of restriction.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you couldn't even test your transmitter, really, could you?
No, it was all heavily controlled by government services, in this case the post office.
Right,
they were in control of the technical side of all radio,
right.
Civil aviation radio, ham radio, public radio. They had control of the whole thing.
Right. So 10th of November, Tiri gets out, and it's out there, and you get your transmissions going, and probably from that time onwards, you had lots of things that didn't go your way. It probably wasn't the best place you could have moored a boat, but you didn't have much choice.
Well, the guys had worked out this position, which was legally outside the 3-mile limit, and that put it 52 miles, I think it was, from the Auckland post office. It was a long way out, a long way from Auckland, with a small transmitter as well. So it gave a bit of a scratchy sound, which didn't help very much. But we had a signal, and we had a working facility, and that's all that we needed at the time. The rest was just fed by pure enthusiasm.
And it actually was a transmission ship, wasn't it? I mean, DJs didn't... I mean, you had some people on there, but like people like you and Paddy O'Donnell and people didn't stay on the boat, did you?
No, that had been contemplated, as with the big English pirate stations, but they were on big ships that were very stable. In our case, it was not possible to have a lot of people and to play records on a bouncing wooden tub out in the middle of the ocean. So we decided that we worked up a high-tech system in those days of recording everything onto half-hour tapes, and once a week flying basically an aircraft load of tapes, a small aircraft load of tapes out to the Great Barrier, and ferrying those tapes across to the ship from Tryphena with the infamous Bill Gibbs at the helm of his fishing boat, and then bringing the old tapes, the spent tapes, back, and the relief crew. And we'd put a relief crew on with the tapes and bring the old crew back so they could have a break.
Yeah.
And that happened every Friday for, 3.5 years.
And that's when you went to the Station Hotel?
Station Hotel Friday nights was the big night.
Yeah.
We'd all head across to the Station Hotel. The crew would have just come off the boat, and they were very thirsty. They hadn't seen ladies for 1-2 weeks, and it was a big time.
I think you guys went a long way to buying the Station Hotel, didn't you?
We were certainly very well known to the management, put it that way.
Right. So you did have... Terry had a bad time when they went to look for that seaman that had come off his boat and ended up on the rocks. And that's when Paul Lynham does that broadcast that's sort of like broadcasting history, isn't it, really?
Yes, it certainly was. It certainly was. Poor old Paul with the water washing around his knees as he was in the hold right next to the transmitter with 11,000 volts of electricity feeding into it. He was understandably pretty scared.
Yeah.
Making his Mayday call, yes.
Yeah. Yes. And I remember hearing it, and I remember I love you, Mum and Dad, at the very end. Yeah, he would have been.
That wasn't Paul. That was Roger King.
Oh, was it?
There were two people involved in that broadcast.
Oh, right.
Paul started it off, and he headed off to do something, and Roger, who was a crewman, came back on and made a few further announcements and finished with "I love you, Mum and Dad" before he buggered off to get off the boat.
Yeah, because it had been black.
Because it was actually sitting on the rocks at Wonga Parapara. It wasn't, it wasn't out at sea. It had foundered on the rocks.
But it was being pounded away. You could.
Oh yeah,
actually,
it was a big,
hear it.
Big swell, big sea that night. Yeah.
You can actually hear it.
It was a terrifying experience for all of the guys.
Yeah. So there was a real advertising change. I mean, you bought out, I remember you added in extra words, more than the government broadcasting would allow. You allowed superlatives.
I mean,
that was really interesting. And then, of course, you had the Sound Cruiser. And that went everywhere, didn't it?
Yes, well, that was sort of our public face, really. We were able to go out and just tape our programs anywhere we wanted to. It was just a caravan with recording equipment in it. And we'd sit at the beach and run competitions with Coca-Cola and the like. And
You even got
get to know the teenagers, which we were there to do.
Yeah, you even got to present the sash to Miss Coca-Cola.
We did a Miss Coca-Cola contest for many years in a row, actually.
Yeah. And there was you and...
It was a pleasant experience, yes. Yeah.
There was you and Robbie there presenting the sash.
Oh, you've done your homework all right.
Yeah. And I tell you something I saw that I thought was a bit funny. All the other DJs had these pop stars, and you had Rob Muldoon to interview.
That was quite a critical time, too, because we were just turning the road in our relationships with the politicians at that point. And a couple of them had sort of shown a little bit of interest in us, and Muldoon in particular. I think he was the right man at the right time for us. He was a he was a tough sod, but he was fair, particularly in relation to the broadcasting law. I don't think he fully agreed with everything that was going on in broadcasting, and that gave us a bit of an ally, which we he helped see us through right through to the point where we finally got our license. That I don't know whether you'd call it a friendship, but it was certainly a close relationship.
Yeah.
Which again, Derek and David fostered with Rob Muldoon.
And we
got his trust. We had a few clandestine meetings with him in the days leading up to, you know, getting what we wanted. He was very tough man to deal with, but he, as I said, he was fair about it. You know?
Yeah. And I think that somehow he operated like that because he did have all sorts of relationships with different kinds of people that people wouldn't have expected him to have. The interesting thing is, where you got the $20,000 from the Tea Council to advertise tea.
Yeah. Well, getting money for advertising was always a problem. And to get a big contract like that, to try and sell tea to young people, which in those days you would have thought was an impossible task, was a great great victory for us. The Tea Council were regular clients of ours for years.
Yeah. Didn't the Sound Cruiser, wasn't it ultimately in the shape of a teapot?
Oh, yes, at one stage it was, yes. It was, we would stick our sponsor stuff all over the place, you know, wherever. Yeah. If we had a valuable sponsor like the Tea Council or Coca-Cola or Europa Oil,
yeah,
we would really look after them.
Yeah, well, they were the ones that really supported you, didn't they?
Well, they did, you know, and they had the law against them that the government were trying to... You know, the government took away all the tax advantages of advertising with us. They made it as hard as possible to advertise with us, and these people still stuck with us, and they deserved every inch of loyalty we could give them.
So you ended up with the Tiri 2, which was a replacement from the Tiri, because that wasn't seaworthy again. And then you had that final episode where you ended up on the beach.
Yeah, at Waitu, yeah. Yeah, well, that was the big storm that sank the Maranui off the coast of New Zealand. It was a huge storm, and the bloody thing broke its moorings, and Lloyd Griffiths, the skipper, did all he could, but it was basically the weather beat him, and he very skillfully got it up in the middle of the night on a sandy beach, God knows how.
Yeah,
nobody was hurt.
No, that was actually amazing to see it just sitting there, because that was a bad winter too. I mean, you didn't have the best of boats.
Yeah, it was. I think, was that the year of the Waihini storm as well? I can't remember, but I know that was one of the events that we had to sort of sit through. It wasn't easy.
Sorry, I talked over you. That probably was the Waihini storm.
Yeah, probably was. Yeah.
Well, look, I really appreciate what you giving up your time to talk to me, especially someone who probably I can blame you. It's taken me a long time to get on radio, but that marathon, was it a talkathon or something on the corner of Queen Street and whatever? was it George Courts?
The Awakeathon at George Courts.
Awakeathon, that's right.
John Court's window, yeah.
Yeah, and you guys stayed awake. I used to go there all the time.
Yes, that was the idea, an idea that we had, that we would have a contest against each other, and each of us would stay on air in the window for as long as we could, and one of us would set the world record, basically. And so one after the other for 2.5 weeks, I think it was, we broadcast.
Yeah, it was a long time.
And we literally broadcast until we dropped. And then the next guy would take over, and he'd go on and try and beat the previous guy's record. And it was a hugely popular promotion.
Oh. On a Saturday, it was just packed.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes, and it was a great thing.
Oh, it was a jolly old time, the whole thing. It was 3.5 years that I wouldn't swap with anybody.
I think the thing is, people... You know, I talked to people on the station, none of them knew Hauraki, but the apps was amazing time, and the radio was just so bright and so fast and so pacey. It was, and I remember the One Way D started broadcasting, the government radio started broadcasting without ads. I mean, they tried everything, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, they threw a lot of stuff at us, but they weren't reckoning on a bunch of young guys who were willing basically to work for nothing as long as it took. You know, there was terrific determination there, and we were so well supported by the public of Auckland. We knew we had right on our side, so that was the main impetus for the whole thing, really. You know, that we knew that sooner or later something was going to crack, and we'd like to be there when it happened.
Right,
and we were.
Yeah,
we were there, and we got our rightful license, and away we went.
I've got a track I'd like just to... It's only a very short one. I don't want to take up too much more of your time.
Right.
But I'd just like to play this for you.
This is Ian McGann for David Gates, our skippers and crew, and the whole gang at Radio Hauraki. On this, our 1111th day at sea, it's goodbye from the Tiri. Au revoir, good night, and thank you.
Well, that was the last broadcast from the Tiri.
Yes, that was a very emotional time for all of us. We were all jammed in the studio out at Great Barrier Island for that last broadcast before we closed down. Because we made a deal with the government that we would close down at a certain date. I think it was the 31st of May.
And, of course, there was the sad trip back to Auckland because you were set up for a mayoral reception and all sorts.
Yeah. Well, that was another... We had this incredible history. There were pivotal times in the whole thing where incredible things happened. And the last was the saddest, losing Rick Grant.
Yeah, that was
losing just... Losing him overboard. It was just a terrible tragedy. And, It was just awful.
Can't remember whether I heard Derek Lowe or was it David Gapes, and they were just saying, it's not fair, it's not fair,
exactly.
It's not fair.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd battled through all sorts of things. The crew had been at enormous risk.
Yeah.
And just right then at the end, it just...
It was pretty awful, and we all felt, you know, really hard done by over that. And not only that, but we lost a great guy. He was a great fellow. He was a great member of the team. And he was by far our best, the best we had on air.
Superb disc jockey. I've often wondered just what he could have done because he was just amazing. You're right. I remember seeing him at some of the... Was it Levine's or one of those places? And he could just... The kids, everybody just came up to him. They loved him.
He was a very charismatic fellow, and he wasn't scared of the limelight. He'd go out and make friends like no problem at all. He was just one of those great people, and it's interesting that they made an excellent movie of the history of Radio Hauraki, which we'll be screening on television soon.
Yeah,
and I was very pleased that the movie pays great tribute to Rick.
Yeah.
I'm
looking forward to seeing that. As I said to you before, we're using the 3 mile limit as a fundraiser. I mean, it is an adventure film, and it's based on the story, but it was an adventure, wasn't it?
It was a great adventure, marked by these, as I said before, pivotal moments that seem to sort of, in the end, link up to tell a fantastic story, which today's generation know very little about it, of course, but when it's retold as it's going to be on television, I'm sure it'll impress people because there were so many things that happened that went to make up this big adventure.
Well, thank you very, very much for your time. I really value it, and we'll look forward to the documentary.
Well, as you say, there are two. We it must be something about being famous 50 years on, because suddenly there are two movies made about the same event. So I suppose that's a compliment in a way.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you. Thank you very, very much, Ian.
And you're welcome, David. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah.
It's 1965. All you play is music by dead people.
Maury says we can get this boat to seaworthy.
Whatever Maury's smoking, I want some of it.
The ringleader is Richard Davis. He's just a radical with a crazy idea.
And that idea became Radio Hauraki. On Friday, March 7th, Waiheke Radio and Wild Days bring you the film premiere of 3 Mile Limit, the internationally acclaimed, award-winning Kiwi movie telling the story of New Zealand's very own pirates of the airwaves, Radio Hauraki. 3 Mile Limit tells the story of New Zealand's only pirate radio station and the first rock and roll station in New Zealand, Radio Hauraki. Broadcasting from international waters from 1966 to 1970, enduring storms, shipwrecks, financial woes, bureaucratic harassment and personal tragedy, this is a true story of Kiwi courage and determination to take on and beat broadcasting bureaucracy. This fundraising movie night for Waiheke Radio is on Friday, March 7th. Doors open at 7:30 p.m. and the movie starts at 7:45. Tickets for this premiere screening are only $20, which includes some 60s-themed nibbles and a shot of Wild Days rum. Get your tickets from Shop the Rock in Oneroa Village, Brendan's Coffee Cart at Ostend Causeway, or at the radio station at 4 Carora Road on Saturday mornings between 10 and midday. 3 Mile Limit, Friday, March 7 at 7:30 at Waiheke Cinema.
Mayday, mayday! It's the Terry!
I warned you it would end like this.
End? This is just the beginning.
Well, I have my next guest in the studio, Russell. He's from Friends of the Street. Good morning, Russell.
Good morning.
Just so, I mean, people probably know, but let's just go over it. Friends of the Street, what do they actually do?
Friends of the Street was started 12 years ago by Hira Mons and a group of people from the community board. What it is it's a service for young teenagers who they go out on a Saturday night. Some of them are out babysitting, working jobs. Some of them out at parties and that. And they have to get home. And the roads are so dodgy over here. They're dark. They're lots of potholes, lots of dangerous corners, a lack of footpaths. And therefore, we decided the best way to keep kids alive was to actually pick them up and drop them at their house for about a coin donation.
Yeah, and so that's out every Saturday night?
It's out every Friday, Saturday night. Yeah.
Friday and Saturday?
Yep, from 10:30 p.m. at night through to 2 in the morning.
And so you'd be dependent on, obviously, on volunteers?
Definitely. We always need volunteers. What we try to target is parents of that age group, because their children are out using the service. They're the best people. They know all their friends. They know all the kids, and therefore they're the best.
And they know dealing with that age group.
That's right, because they deal with it in their home as well. Yeah. It's actually quite nice in the van, because we're actually providing a service for the kids, so we get a whole different range of respect from the children, because we're actually helping them.
Yeah, you're actually making sure they get home rather than telling them what to do.
That's right, and we're not involved in the politics of what they're actually doing. We're trying to keep them alive till their brains grow up.
Yeah, that's interesting. Actually, you could probably keep going for a long time with some of the blokes I've known over the years. I think women seem to grow up, but I think blokes take a while. Yeah. I think you could still be out there for many years.
Well, that's why we cap. Why we cap the age group. It's mainly the kids that go to high school.
Yeah.
And when
yeah.
they turn 18, they can afford cabs and stuff like that because they have a job.
And under that age, they're not sure just what they're doing, and they can make some fairly inappropriate decisions about things if they're not careful.
That's exactly right, because we all know that when we were young, we did some dumb things. And
really?
Yeah. Well, I can list quite a few of my own.
And, yeah, how long have we got? I'll give you a competition.
It's just poor choices, maybe a little bit inebriated, therefore you think you're better than you really are, or you don't think safety's important at the time. There's lots of different things that can happen by accident.
Decision-making and alcohol aren't a good mixture, are they?
Definitely not for learners.
I'm not sure about anybody really. But so what are you, I I read your letter in the Golf News. So what's your latest plan that you've got going?
Oh, no. We've been running our beautiful van that has done us 10 years service. And basically, the roads on Waiheke are pretty rough on a vehicle, and we really need a new one. It's starting to fall apart. It's starting to cost us lots of money in warrants. The door at the side is starting to not open and close properly. We really need a new van. And so we're going all out to try and raise enough money over the next 2-3 weeks to buy a van.
Yeah, and certainly you've got to have the warrants. You've got to have everything.
Oh, it's all got to be good.
If you're doing this kind of service.
Yeah.
So how you've got some money.
We've actually got $10,000 that we've had in the account for a while that's been sitting aside for this purchase, but we really need a van that's going to last us 10 years. And so, therefore, we're looking for about another $20,000 to buy something pretty flash, but we'll get 10 years service out of it.
Right, and that's important. There's no point in doing short-term things. It's just a waste of money, isn't it?
Well, that's right. We could spend $15,000 on a van that'll last 5 years.
Yeah.
But really, once we get it all labelled up and stuff, we'll have a van that's distinguishable for years.
Right. And so what are you doing? What's your first plan?
Okay, so our first thing we're doing is next Sunday we've got the Little Day Inn. Now, the Little Day Inn has been around for nearly 10 years as well. There's been about 7 of them over the time. And they're quite big organisations. We've got 10 bands playing for 6 hours at the dirt track from 3 o'clock at night through to 9 o'clock at night. Or 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah. That's right. I thought that was it. So you've got that. Who's coming over?
We've got a band, Rats Magic. Now, a lot of people on Waiheke will know Kristen Basevich, and he was a young guy at the Waiheke High School who was quite a good guitarist. He went on to go to Auckland to school and after Waiheke High School and made up the band Rats Magic, which play really cool music. They have their own style, they have their own sort of sound, and they're a real delight. We have a girl called Catastrophic, who has the new voice of Auckland. She has the most incredible voice for singing, and she'll be really great. But we also have a whole bunch of Waiheke bands as well.
Oh, so that's great. And used to be at the sports park. This time it's at the dirt track.
That's right, yeah. We try to move around a bit too, because we've had it at the sports ground down by the causeway as well. We had it at the Rangihua park, sports park there, and the dirt track, they're always a great venue for us, because those dirt track people are always helping us.
They're a great bunch of people. So what was the date again?
It's February the 16th.
February the 16th. And what does it cost to get in?
It's free to get in, mm-hmm. but we'll be sending around a bucket for donations, because we really want Waiheke to dig deep so that we can get a new van. I mean, there would be half of Waiheke have used the service over the years, even when they're young, even when they're older, when we've picked up the odd elderly person who might be in their 20s or 30s now. We really need Waiheke to help out to sort of like chuck some money in so that we don't have to keep collecting for years and years.
Right.
Yeah.
So how much have you raised in these kind of, when you did this before? Is it a successful?
It's not a very successful way of fundraising, but it's great for advertising. Yeah. A lot of times that we try to provide entertainment for people so that it's an ad for us out in the community, because we're out in the middle of the night and nobody knows we exist really, you know, sort of. And so for years and years and years, we can be just out there doing it and people will forget we even are around. So this is our daytime activity to plug the service. The cost of putting on an event like this is quite a few thousand dollars, which we've sort of like raised and dipping into our running account so that we can put the show on. But there'll be $2,000 or $3,000 of costs that we'll be putting forward, and so we need to raise that as well as the extra money.
Yeah, so you've sort of start a bit behind, don't
That's
you?
That's right. Yeah.
Do you do any other fundraising?
Yes, in the following week, I have about 20 to 30 planes flying into the airport at the top of Onatangi, the Mustn't Drive Airport. Now, this is something that started 3 or 4 years ago where I thought I was going to have a couple of microlights turn up, and 10, 11 planes turned up and came to show off their planes, you know, like have a look around Waiheke. I took them down to Whakanefa Park for a barbecue, sent them back on their way. The next year, 20 planes turned up, and they stayed camping the night down at Whakanefa, and they find it's an absolutely beautiful place. But what's really remarkable about it is that there's all sorts of planes. They're sort of like, some of them are homemade. There's a couple of gyrocopters in there, microlights, four-seaters, six-seaters, beautifully sports car planes.
And how do you raise money from that?
Well, what we'll do is we'll have a bucket up there for chucking in some money for Friends of the Street. Anyone who wants to come up between 2 o'clock and 4 o'clock, they can come and have a look at the planes, talk to the pilots. If you're interested in being a pilot or owning your own plane, these are the guys to talk to, because they go around the country every month, flying off here and there, go picnicking up and down the country. They have a lot of fun, and so they'll be the people to talk to if you're interested in flight, interested in looking at sports planes or anything like that, and even a gyrocopter, you know, like I'm fascinated in them myself.
Oh, that's amazing. That's just incredible. Yeah. So people are really fantastic. So if somebody wants to get hold of you, Russell, how do they get hold of you if they want to speak to you about anything?
My phone number's in the Golf News and the letters to the editor.
Yeah,
I try to put it in.
There's one here, 027-204-2817.
Yep, that's me. And you can text me. Better to text than to phone, because I'm always in and out of range. Also, I'm always at the market every Saturday, except today, of course, up by the front where the burger van is. Selling my wares, because I sell tourist trinkets.
Oh, brilliant. Oh, that's great. So that's something you need to be back on. At least it didn't rain. And I was talking to a few people this morning, and they were all hoping it wouldn't rain. Okay, so that's Friends of the Street, and it's in the Golf News on page 6. And it's between the hour. Oh, you just give people again. 16th, Sunday the 16th of February, 3 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Dirt Track.
Yeah,
and please, you'd really like Waiheke to dig deep and help friends of the street.
Yeah, heaps of people to come along, and also heaps of money to put in the buckets, and we'll have a new van for 10 years.
Okay, well, thank you for coming in, Russell.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
I've just got Dan Bollard in the studio, and he's going to talk to us about Waiheke TV. Morning, Dan.
Morning, David. It's actually Dan Ballard, but that's okay. That's okay.
Did I get it wrong?
Oh, you said Dan Bollard.
Oh, Bollard. Yeah, I'm Dan, sorry.
That's
Ballard,
fine.
Yeah.
No problem.
I'd been thinking about that all morning, actually. Make sure you get it right. It probably wasn't the first time, because Ballard and Bollard, I think people would go for Bollard.
Very easy to make that mistake.
Okay, so Dan, go ahead and tell us all about Waiheke Radio.
Waiheke TV. Oh. No problem. So what is Waiheke TV? Well, Waiheke TV, it's all about events, opinions, and businesses. And it's look, Waiheke is filled with such amazing people, and I just wanted a way to capture some of that. And it's so we take 90 seconds to 2 minute videos of people talking about either their businesses or themselves, or if they've got an opinion about something, and pop that onto YouTube and Facebook. And we do it completely for free. There's no charge, and it's just a neat way to share a little bit of Waiheke with some of the world. It's fantastic.
So if somebody wants to do an ad for themselves about their business,
that
they can talk to you and you get it ready, and they can put it on YouTube, and then they can just refer to that, and people can have a look at it.
Absolutely, yeah. Some of the ones we've done so far is the Island Gelato, the guys that set up the down on the corner in Onirawa. So that's been a very popular video, and we've done quite a few businesses now. So yeah, just get in touch, and we can put together a video.
Oh right, Waiheke TV sounds really exciting. You know, I'm saying it again to make sure I've got it etched into my brain. I say radio
radio so many times in a week, it's easy to get it mixed up. So they talk to you, and do you take the... You do the video?
Yep. So we video either I've got a high-definition camera, which I do all my videoing on, and we take it back to the office and just mix it up and put it online. So.
And there's no charge for this?
No. So I try to do as many videos as quickly as possible. So the videos aren't – we just do one – typically we do one take. We might do a couple of cutaway shots, and that's just to save time, really, so we don't have to keep cutting back and forth. But, yeah.
And do you think you'll get a lot of demand for this?
I think so. I have to drum up a little demand right at the start, but I'm hoping that people will get in contact when they've got really interesting issues that they want to discuss.
Is this something you've been doing for a while, or you've been interested in doing this?
I've been interested in it for a while. It's actually just a brand new project that's just started a couple of weeks ago. So it's just one of those things that I thought would be neat to do. No one's doing it at the moment. So it's just sort of like a little video promo of Waiheke. So anyone that's interested in it, and if you want to watch the videos, you just go to Facebook and search for Waiheke TV, and you like the page, and you'll instantly get the videos added to your stream whenever they come online.
Oh, that's amazing. And you could do message for someone for a wedding anniversary or a major birthday or something?
I haven't really done so much of that type of thing. Mainly events, like I did a little video for the event down at Little Oniroa a couple of weeks back. That was a really, really neat event, I thought. And so events and businesses and opinions are sort of the angle that I've gone
opinions.
Down.
That's interesting. Interesting. Have you done anyone? Because Waiheke's full of opinions.
It certainly is. I've done... there's one I did on Directions Matiatia. What those guys are doing with fighting the marina down at Matiatia. So that was one of the early ones I did right at the start. So,
and that's an important way of getting a message out, isn't it?
Absolutely,
because you can't keeping on telling people all the time. You can, in YouTube, such a big thing now. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's you can just upload videos to it and away you go. So. No, it's a good time, and I know I'm enjoying it, and it's just it's also an excuse to meet some more people as well. So, I've been really enjoying meeting more people and chatting about what's going on in their lives. So, fantastic.
Yeah, that's fascinating, because when Chris told me that you would come on to have a chat, wasn't absolutely clear of what it was going to be, but it's really interesting. So, if somebody wants to get hold of you, Dan, where do they?
The easiest way is probably just to like the Facebook page, Waiheke TV, and then you can just send me a message through that system. Or you can call me on this is actually a VoIP number, but I'm on Waiheke, but it's 973-4234.
Yeah, that's the number that I use. So your business is on the island as well?
Yes.
Because you have Cyber Hub, is it?
That's correct. Yes, yeah. I run a web hosting and web design company from Waiheke. And part of the whole thing is, video and media is becoming such an important part of websites and internet. So this has also been a learning curve for me to learn how to make videos as well for businesses and their websites and how to promote themselves. So
yeah, well, it's really great that you're doing it, without a charge. So just getting onto Cyber Hub, I think it's good to promote you if you're going to be kind to the community. Let's talk a little bit about Cyber Hub. So have you designed websites for Waiheke businesses?
I've done some Waiheke businesses. So web design is becoming almost any high school kid can make a website these days. It's not a hard thing to do, but what is difficult is turning a website into something that will generate leads for your business and help increase your sales. And that's what's becoming more and more is using your website as a platform to sell. And that's more what I'm interested in is enabling people's websites to get results for them.
Yeah. So. And that's what they're designed for. So they do need, that's what people are hoping they'll do.
That's
right. So they need to be able to do it. And we all think we can do things for ourselves, but we can all put a bit of a static page up there. But when it comes to really designing it, it pays to go to an expert. Jan and I were just talking about that. She's passed her website over for her work as a celebrant to a a person who professionally does them.
Brilliant.
So she gets it done properly. Well, yeah. Not, you know, gets it done at a standard, because you don't know everything, and the more you do, the better you are. So give us that number again.
So that's 973-4234.
All right, or they can go to Waiheke TV, like the page, and send you a message. It sounds a great thing to have a look. I must have a look and check it out. So how long have you actually had your business, CyberHub?
It's been going since 2006.
Oh, so it's been a while.
Yeah, relatively, me and my wife are relatively new to the island, so we've been on the island for coming up to 15 months now, and so we love living here, and we're getting involved in the community, and it's fantastic.
Well, I think she's also got really involved in the community.
she has, yes. So yeah,
that's a big ask, that one. I know Sharon is on the radio, and she often talks to me about when she goes there. Everybody wants to ask her a question or tell her what she should do.
yeah, that's right. It's a big responsibility being with Bex being on the board, but no, she's really liking it. And
oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very, very much. That's really great to find out about that, so people can take advantage of it. And excellent. I'm just so delighted that there's no charge. That's amazing. It's really good on you.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Well,
Thanks,
David. That was Dan. Talking about his Waiheke TV, and you can go to YouTube, have a look at Radio TV, and you can follow it up from there.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua.